From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast Day M. Tonight, our UFO extravaganza begins this hour. But first, you know, I was 27 years old when Elvis Presley died. 32 years later, the rumor still is out there that he's alive somewhere. Well, I guess it's going to happen with Michael Jackson, too. A video floating around the internet claiming to show Michael Jackson still alive is creating a bit of a stir. As a matter of fact, the Chicago Tribune has already gone with the story. A description posted by a user called Los Angeles Cot 24 on LiveLeak.com reads that this video shows that Michael was still alive after his body was transported to the Los Angeles Department of Coroner. It goes on to say that I checked the license plate number. Now, not me, but the person who wrote this. And it looks like the King of Pop is jumping out of the same van his dead body has been in. Now, we've got a link for you up there at coasttocoastam.com, right up there next to the feature story. You can look at this video by yourself and make up your own mind. The user claims to have obtained the video from a trustworthy source, but there's nothing to suggest that the person exiting the coroner's vehicle is Michael Jackson, and there is no timestamp on the video. Though Los Angeles Cot 24 offers the assurance it's real and Michael's alive, it's almost certainly unrelated to the Jackson case. Still, the videos like this are sure to fuel the conspiracies who suggest the King of Pop is still alive. I would bet my bottom dollar that Michael Jackson is no longer with us. But the video sure is weird. Take a look. NASA calls off the Space Shuttle Discovery launch because of a bad fuel leak. The space agency was fueling the shuttle Tuesday for an early morning launch Wednesday, and thunderstorms also prevented Discovery from blasting off early Tuesday. Discovery was bound for the International Space Station. It will haul up thousands of pounds of supplies, including six mice, for a bone experiment and a treadmill named for Comedy Central Stephen Colbert. NASA has until the end of August to launch Discovery and its seven astronauts. Otherwise, the mission will slide into October because other countries are scheduled to launch their spacecraft. Authorities say the mother of a Florida girl suffocated by a pet python last month has been charged in the child's death. The Sumter County Sheriff's Office says 19-year-old Jaron Ashley Hare and her boyfriend, 32-year-old Charles Jackson Darnell, were each charged with manslaughter, third-degree murder, and child abuse. The two-year-old died July 1st. Authorities say Darnell found the 8-foot python wrapped around her that morning. He stabbed it several times. It eventually released her. A medical examiner determined the girl died from asphyxiation. U.S. unemployment will surge to 10% this year, and the budget deficit will be $1.5 trillion next year, both higher than previous Obama administration forecasts because of a recession that was deeper and longer than expected. And the Federal Reserve must, for the first time, identify the companies in its emergency lending programs after losing a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit. Manhattan Chief U.S. District Judge Loretta Preska ruled against the central bank, rejecting the argument that loan records aren't covered by the law because their disclosure would harm borrowers' competitive positions. And as we reported last night and confirmed today, President Obama has nominated Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke to a second four-year term, praising the central bank chief for bold, persistent experimentation to bring the economy back from the brink of collapse. But it's not back yet from the brink of collapse. The president, vacationing on Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts, made the announcement in a move aimed at continuity as the economy tries to pull out of a recession. Gerald Celente on the line with us now, trendsresearch.com. We're not out of it yet, Gerald, are we?
Well, no, and how could anyone possibly listen to what the administration is saying? Let's go back to July. We heard Vice President Biden say, quote, "The truth is we and everyone else misread the economy," as an excuse for why their projections were off. And now we hear from President Obama's chief economic advisor, Christine Romer, saying, quote, "This recession was simply worse than the information that we and other forecasters had back in last fall and early this winter, whereby they said that the average unemployment in 2010 would be 7.9%. And as you well know, it's 9.4 already and had hit 9.5. How could people believe these people? They're either ignorant from coming up with such bad forecasts, arrogant, thinking that they know everything and won't ask anyone else because us and other forecasters were totally opposite to them, or thirdly, they're lying to us. So their projections that we're going to get out of this are as faulty as their projections were before.
That means no confidence here, Gerald. None at all.
None at all. How can you?
Gerald Celente, trendsresearch.com. Thank you so much, Gerald. A 400-pound eighth grader's sudden death during a football conditioning lap has revived discussion about whether testing children's hearts before they engage in sports or strenuous activity is necessary. Anthony Troop Jr. collapsed on a suburban St. Louis football field before he finished running a lap before practice. The oversized 13-year-old was pronounced dead at a local hospital an hour later. The boy, known as Big Ant, for his 6'2", nearly 400-pound body, had a good work ethic and moved as fast and as strong as boys less than half his size, according to his coach. U.S. authorities are investigating concerns that an anti-obesity drug widely available over-the-counter may cause liver damage. Orlistat went on sale under the brand name Ali without the need for a prescription in the United Kingdom in April. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has received more than 30 reports linking the drug to serious liver injury. The manufacturer, GlaxoSmithKline, said there was no evidence the drug caused liver damage. Tobacco will kill 6 million people next year from cancer, heart disease, emphysema, and a range of other ills. Global cancer experts are predicting this in a report. The new Tobacco Atlas from the World Lung Foundation and the American Cancer Society estimates that tobacco use costs the global economy $500 billion a year in direct medical expenses, lost productivity, and environmental harm. And we're constantly being told to put on sunscreen to protect from sun, right? But it could be damage to our brains, too, in the meantime. Two professors from Northern Ireland have been given a substantial grant by the European Union to explore a possible link between sunscreen lotion and Alzheimer's disease. The professors are leading a groundbreaking three-year research project into whether human-engineered nanoparticles, such as those found in sunscreen, can induce neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's. In an online video, the American Civil Liberties Union takes a break from its serious side to illustrate how new technologies and weak privacy laws can be used to reveal sensitive information about a person involved in even the most mundane things of business transactions, including ordering a pizza.
Pizza Palace, guaranteed hot in 30 minutes or it's free. This is Mary. May I take your order?
Hi, Mary. Yes, I'd like to order.
Is this Mr. Kelly?
Yes.
Thank you for calling again, sir. I share your national identification number as 610-204-9998-45-54610. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. I see you live at 736 Montrose Court, but you're calling from your cell phone. Are you at home?
I'm just leaving work, but I'm...
Oh, we can deliver to Bob's Auto Supply. That's at 175 Lincoln Avenue, yes?
No, I'm on my way home. How do you know all this stuff?
We just got wired into the system, sir.
Oh, well, I'd like to order a couple of your double meat special pizzas.
Sure thing. There'll be a new $20 charge for those, sir.
What do you mean?
Sir, the system shows me that your medical records indicate that you have high blood pressure and extremely high cholesterol. Luckily, we have a new agreement with your national health care provider that allows us to sell you double meat pies as long as you agree to waive all future claims of liability.
What?
Do you agree, sir? You can sign the form when we deliver, but there is a charge for processing. The total is $67 even.
$67?
Well, that includes the delivery surcharge of $15 to cover the added risk to our driver of traveling through an orange zone.
I live in an orange zone?
Now you do. Looks like there was another robbery on Montrose yesterday. You could save $48 if you ordered our special Sprout Submarine Combo and picked it up yourself. Comes with tofu sticks. Those are very tasty, sir. Good value, too.
But I want double meat.
Well, I'm sure you can afford the $67 then. You just bought those tickets to Hawaii. They weren't cheap, eh? Oh, but I see you checked out the budget beach bum at the library last week. Up to you, sir.
All right. I'll get the Sprout subs.
Good choice, sir. Gotta watch that waist if you're hitting the beach, eh? 42 inches. Wow. Man, I'd say tofu and sprouts is, like, required.
That's how much?
Just between you and me, there's a $3 off coupon in this month's Total Men's Fitness magazine. Your wife, Betty, subscribes to that, right? Anyhow, clip that and it's $19.99 even. Whoa, looks like you maxed out on all your credit cards. Bring cash, okay?
There goes our privacy. The ACLU, which I have my issues with, said that policies like the Patriot Act give the government broad surveillance powers that can be used to intrude on the private lives of you. Our feature story at coasttocoastam.com, a new restaurant has opened in China and is serving meals cooked by robot chefs. The iRobot restaurant, based on two robots with new technology, they can cook up dishes within 2 or 3 minutes, hundreds of traditional Chinese dishes. And scientists say, get this, that they have designed a plant filtration system that lets you drink your own shower water. It has to do with plants growing in the shower, and they, you know, somehow filter this out. I don't think if we ever get to the point where we got to drink that, we're in trouble. Of course, we are probably drinking worse, aren't we? An unemployed Arkansas woman that has been on this program before and her unborn son, whose name she tried to auction on eBay, just simply can't seem to catch a break. After 5 auctions on the internet marketplace, LaVon Drummond, 36 years old, saw a winning bid of $6,800 dashed when the winning bidder, a producer at an internet radio talk show, told the mother of 6 that he had no intention of paying for the naming rights of her 7th child. What happened, LaVon? Did he trick you?
Well, he just didn't expect some of the other high bidders to retract their bids. And
he got trapped, didn't he?
Yeah, basically he did. I forgave him. I didn't hold him accountable.
In doing so, though, you're out again.
It's okay. I'm done, though.
No more auctions on eBay.
No. No.
That's a little disappointing for you, isn't it?
What a roller coaster. I'm not willing to go through that again.
5 times. eBay's kicked you off, brought you back, kicked you off, brought you back, and now this happens.
Yes. So.
Well, you know our bid of $100 to name your little boy still stands.
At this time, it's okay. I'll be all right.
I'll put a deadline on it for you.
No,
give you 2 days to make up your mind.
All right, I'll think about it.
All right, thanks.
You're welcome.
Bye. Poor lady. She's been trying to sell that name, and it just isn't going to happen. And a retired South Carolina state employee who spent just $2 on the Powerball lottery last week, guess what? He wins $260 million. Now he needs to decide if he's going to take it over 3 decades or take a lump sum, $129 million, and just walk. What would you do? You know, we've been following UFO stories on this show for a number of years. There's a strange one out there called the Mexico Roswell. Here's an excerpt from an episode of UFO Hunters, which was on the History Channel last year.
Meaning we have to go that way.
Looks like something over here.
Where is it, Noe?
Right up ahead. There's stuff all over the
Look.
Place. You find it?
It's over here.
Way over there?
Right here.
The team has located part of the wreckage, much of which may not have been seen for over 34 years.
Mexico's Roswell up next. Ruben Uriarte and Noe Torres join us on Coast to Coast as our UFO extravaganza begins. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. 2 guests for you this hour, Ruben Uriarte and Noe Torres, active members of the UFO research community with many years of experience as investigators, authors, lecturers. They both have traveled extensively while conducting research for their books and have spoken at numerous conferences, including the Roswell Museum's annual UFO Festival, the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference in Las Vegas, and the Bay Area UFO Expo as well. Here they are on Coast to Coast. Hello, Ruben. Hello, Noe.
Hey there, George. Thank you very much for having us.
Likewise. Tell me a little bit about this Mexico Roswell case.
Noe, you want to go ahead and jump right into that, and then I'll
yes, back
you.
Appreciate you having us on tonight,
sure
George. We consider this one of the most fascinating UFO stories that has ever been told, and it is also one that you hear very little about among ufologists who are looking at crash retrieval cases such as this. It all started 35 years ago tonight. It happened along the Texas-Mexico border down near El Paso, Texas. And what happened was a mid-air collision between a small private plane like a Beechcraft Bonanza or a Moody Acclaim, something along that level, having a mid-air collision with an object that had been picked up by military radar coming off the Gulf of Mexico toward Texas. This object had been observed flying at over 2,500 miles per hour at an altitude of 75,000 feet. And so to everybody's amazement, it just suddenly popped on radar screens and started moving toward the coast. Suddenly, it angled south toward the southern tip of Texas and then made a 90-degree turn into northern Mexico, eventually coming over the small town of Coyame, Chihuahua, in the northern part of Mexico. It's a very rugged and isolated desert location that Ruben and I have been to several times. And it was there that everybody that has looked into this case finds the remarkable evidence that these two flying vehicles, the small airplane that had taken off from El Paso and this unknown object coming in off the Gulf of Mexico, collided in midair and raining down debris on the desert below. And then the fascinating story that ensues after that is a recovery attempt both by the Mexican and U.S. governments trying to get out and recover this crashed UFO.
Was it first come, first serve on that?
Well, actually, you know, Ruben and I did a lot of research on past cases involving the retrieval of U.S. military missiles and experimental aircraft that have strayed into northern Mexico. And so normally the retrieval is done by the U.S. government with permission from Mexico. That's been the normal historic case. In this instance, we don't know if it was a local field commander making a decision. Somehow, the Mexican government decided to make the crash retrieval attempt. And as a result of that ill-advised decision, as it turned out, the Mexican military were not prepared to handle the dangers that were present at the crash site. And as a result of that, up to 24 Mexican soldiers lost their lives in attempting to retrieve this downed object.
How did they die?
It appears that they were exposed to an unknown chemical agent, lethal biological or chemical agent that was present at the crash site of this UFO with a small plane. And when they arrived at the scene, they made an assessment of the objects and boarded it. They moved the objects onto the cargo trucks that they had with them, intending to take it back to the nearby army base in Ojinaga, Chihuahua. And they had gone just a short distance away from the crash site when the exposure to whatever toxic agent had been present there at the time that they first arrived. Finally, they succumbed to that. And the cause remains unknown, and we don't have much evidence with regard to what was the agent that caused their death, but it is known that they perished.
Now, how do we know that a U.S. military jet did not collide with this smaller plane? And, of course, the U.S. tried to recover it.
Well,
how do we know
George,
that?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, please. Yeah, basically, George, this information that we receive comes from an internal document. And what they described was that when this object collided with a small airplane, they described it as a small disc, approximately 16 feet 5 inches,
and
about a width of about 5 feet. So we know it was a small disc, but going back, this information was released to UFO researchers back in 1992. And what we believe is that it's referred to as the Deneb report. It's a report that was basically put together by military insiders. So what we did, we did basically follow the paper trail and the descriptions and the geography. And lo and behold, George, what we found was so much activity that's going on in Koyami now.
Okay, let's talk about that activity when we come back. Our two special guests this hour, Ruben Uriarte, Noe Torres, authors of Mexico's Roswell, The Other Roswell, and Mexico's Roswell, The Chihuahua UFO Crash, three major publications. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment as we talk about this incredible case on Coast to Coast AM. Well, ABC News is reporting that Senator Ted Kennedy is dead. Senator Kennedy dying of brain cancer at the age of 77 years old. And so ends just a remarkable story of three brothers, Robert F. Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, and Ted Kennedy, through the history of the ages. Ted Kennedy dead at the age of 77. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We have two guests for you, Noe Torres and Ruben Uriarte, as we talk about the Mexican Roswell case. Noe and Ruben, who got the wreckage? Who was able to pick it up and retrieve it?
Well, basically, the wreckage was picked up by a retrieval team from Fort Bliss. They went in there with a number of helicopters, and they arrived at the convoy, the Mexican convoy, and when they noticed the soldiers that were all dead, they immediately were able to retrieve the UFO from the truck, as well as they gathered all the debris, the vehicles, and they destroyed them. Then they took the disc back to across the border to an area in Van Horn, Texas. And they from there they proceeded what we think, George, to Atlanta, which. What's in Atlanta? We believe it's the Center of Disease Control.
Interesting. Now, did any U.S. military die in this retrieval operation?
To our knowledge, based on the evidence that we've uncovered, there were no U.S. fatalities in this operation. Everybody was able to report back to the Fort Bliss Army Base after the operation. They were debriefed. The equipment was decontaminated. One important difference in the retrieval operation by the Mexican military versus the U.S. is that the Mexicans were not well equipped to deal with hazardous materials. The U.S., on the other hand, went in with a full recovery team with all the precautions for handling hazardous materials. It was an operation that had been well rehearsed. It's one of the ready response teams that kept on standby at all times for situations like this. So, that alludes back to what we were saying earlier, is that normally Mexico would have invited and possibly even encouraged the U.S. to make the recovery, being within 30 miles of the U.S. border. But in this case, probably through decision-making on the part of local commanders, local army commanders in the Mexican military, they attempted the recovery, and the result was disastrous for them.
Now, in this particular case, you two have investigated this for several years. Did you find any evidence of the possibility of alien bodies at this wreckage site?
The initial report and the DENEV document that Ruben had referred to earlier, which originated from some government insiders who had access to the information about the case, does not mention the retrieval of any bodies. However, it also it does tell us that the persons who witnessed the retrieval of the crashed UFO and the subsequent transfer of the crashed object back into Texas, and then eventually to a secret location at a military base somewhere in the U.S. They did not. They never had a look at what the contents of the disc were, and they never had any information about what was found sealed inside. There is no mention of bodies. However, that does not exclude the possibility that there were some. And we've uncovered some secondary sources of information that indicate there could well have been at least one occupant of this object that was found during the recovery effort. But we have yet to verify that.
Other than from you two, why don't we hear a lot about this case?
Well, George, I think probably because of the documents that were there originally back in 1992. Recently, several years ago, the UFO Files History Channel did a whole series of crash retrievals, and it was finally they did one on this particular case, which as a result, well, Noe and I had then started gathering more facts and more detailed information. And what we found, George, was not only the Koyame incident, but there had been a number of other crash retrievals all along the Mexican-Texas border. So we're just barely touching the surface. But our goal is to get this information out and work with with the Mexican investigators and as they're compiling information and do this collaboration. So we're working with many people on this particular case.
What amazes me too, Noe and Ruben, the fact that these craft, if they come from outside planetary systems, traveling millions of miles, maybe within a mothership, and then they come down here. But why do they crash? Why do they collide? You would think that their technology would be so superior that these accidents would not occur.
That's true, but and this is a question that's asked of us very often when we lecture and when we speak on the radio and other media, and there are many possible explanations. The ones that I favor are that these are not infallible beings that we're talking about. These are beings that have to occupy and operate within the same environment and laws of physics that we do. When they come into this unknown environment for them, they are subject to interference from various electromagnetic sources. They have a lot of the same barriers and possible danger points that we experience. We see a lot of crashes that happen on a daily basis throughout the world in terms of our own aircraft and so forth. So, and the other thing is they're operating, as I say, they're operating under conditions that they don't normally, they're not as familiar with as they normally operate in. So that would certainly make it even a riskier proposition for them. And there's also the possibility that some of these craft, perhaps even the UFO that crashed near Koyame, are actually unmanned and could be operated by remote control from a mothership or from a different location. So that's another possibility. And all of them, of course, are subject to weather conditions and other unexpected events. There have been a number of cases where erratic behavior leading to crashes on the part of UFOs has been tied to or has been observed in the past. So I think the main thing to keep in mind is that they're operating under the same laws of physics as we are, and they're as capable of making errors as we are.
Have you two come up with your theories as to what possibly might have killed the Mexican soldiers?
Well, the theory that I've heard one of our fellow researchers who has looked into this case quite a lot as well, Ryan Wood, He favors the theory that the soldiers were exposed to some kind of biological contamination that was present at the crash site. Now, the crash site ruptured the hull of this vessel, and so obviously whatever was in the environment contained within the UFO leaked out into the surrounding desert. At the time that the soldiers from the Mexican military arrived at the scene and kind of started poking and prodding around the crashed saucer, they became exposed to this unknown element, which later caused them to die. And so that's one possibility, either chemical or biological in nature, emanating from within the craft. The theory is that because it took a while for them to actually succumb to this toxic agent, it wasn't something that had that made an immediate impact on them. In other words, they saw no immediate symptoms. And in fact, probably were convinced that they had walked away from this situation without any danger, without any risk to themselves. And it wasn't until later that they began feeling the effects and eventually, died. So apparently it was an exposure to something that took a while to actually kill them. And that's why the biological or some kind of chemical contamination theory seems best there.
Let's take some calls while we're chatting. Let's go to Los Baños, California, west of the Rockies. Hello, Charles. Go ahead.
Good evening. How are you, George?
Good. Thanks.
Well, you kind of just answered my question. I wanted to ask if there was any other reports of not soldiers but Mexican citizens coming down with any type of strange illnesses that you can attribute to the crash.
You know, that's a good question. When we were in Koyami, we spoke with many people. But trying to go back to a case that happened back in 1975, what we found was that many people have left the area. They moved either to the United States or migrated other parts of Mexico. So it was kind of hard to find any of the witnesses that were in that area. We have perhaps a need to look at more health records or anything that might be available to us, but as of right now, we haven't. It's a very small population, and it's in an area that's very remote as well. So those are some of the other factors. One thing about Koyami, it's a population of about 600 people, and it's actually a county. So we're looking at a very small portion, and so perhaps when these bodies were picked up or destroyed, what we were looking at, could this have been a potential Mexico's Andromeda strain?
Tell me a little bit more about this Deneb report.
Well, basically, this report was an insider report. It was basically forwarded to a number of UFO researchers back in 1992. And what's interesting about the word Deneb, as they say, the answer is staring right in front of you. I thought it was basically an acronym that it represented, but after Noe and I had done further research, we found out that it represents it's named after a star system. It's named after a very bright star that is equivalent to 60,000 times the size of our sun. So it definitely has an astronomical connection to it.
Next up, we go to Anonymous, wherever he may be, or she. Hi there.
Hi, George. I'm a big fan, by the way.
Okay.
I have called previous, and I talked to you before about this particular incident that occurred when I was a kid. I was maybe 14, 15 years old.
Are you the one from New Mexico?
No.
No, okay.
Are you the police officer?
Yes.
Oh, great.
All right, good.
There's a lot of ridicule. That's why I want to remain anonymous.
Okay, I understand.
But anyway, when I was about 14, 15 years old, it was around the mid-70s. I was punished for taking a horse and keeping the horse out all day. And subsequently, I was ordered to go and cut some hay from a pasture nearby the little corral in the town of Koyame. I went out by myself, armed only with a little cutting tool to cut. I went into a field where the hay was, and then it was a real short, narrow field. On the other side was a cornfield, and when I started cutting the hay, I noticed that there was something moving the corn stalks. I looked up, and I saw these glowing eyes. This small, back then I thought it was a person or a little kid. The way it walked was almost like it was floating. Couldn't describe it really, other than the last time I talked to you, George, I told you that the incident in Brazil, the crash,
mm-hmm.
That's what it looked like to me. There was only moonlight, and that stayed with me my entire life. Didn't know about the crash, didn't know about anything until a few years ago when they came out on Discovery Channel. I forget what channel it came out on, but that brought back the memory. My grandmother, who has passed on since, told us, you know, when I ran back to the ranch, I was scared. My cousins, everybody was there. And I told them what I saw, and my grandmother relayed the information that they used to see these little beings, and they used to see these things flying in the air, and that they used to steal the salt licks. That would seem kind of odd to me. But, you know, she did draw a picture of it, and it kind of resembled what I thought I saw. And, you know, just that just stayed with me my entire life. And, you know, during that summer also, prior to that incident, maybe about a week prior, we were out in our main ranch, which is about, oh, I'd say about 60, 70 miles northeast of Coyame. It's a little ranch called El Saucito.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, and we were out there hunting at night with spotlights on a stake bed truck, and we saw some objects in the air. And I just recall my cousins saying that, you know, they referred to them as ovnis. And, you know, we saw them jet around. They came down from atop a mountain. There's a mountain there that's north of Coyame, and it's kind of northeast of there. And there's a big, like a scar on the side of the mountain. And my cousins always said that it was a lightning strike, but it was real big. I don't know what it, you know, that's all I know is that they told me that.
Maybe something crashed into that.
Huh? Well, I'm not saying that, but, you know, that's been there for a long time, according to them. But in that general area is where we saw these objects floating around, coming down the side of the mountain. You can see the light hitting the ground. You know, they have cattle, and they're spread out all over the place, and you can see the cattle kind of moving away from the lights as they're shown down on the ground, and then they climb back up to the top of the mountain, kind of like buzzed along the tops of the mountains, and then just shot off at an angle, just out into space.
We are almost out of time. That's an incredible story, yes, all by itself. And I bet you two hear stories like this all the time.
That was fascinating to hear that, George, yeah, because we sat and listened to about 3 hours of eyewitness testimony from the residents of Coyame, this tiny little town in the middle of the desert in Mexico. And the stories we heard sounded just like the story that the gentleman just told us. Amazing stories of UFOs being seen in the Coyame area, and they have a long history there. This is the area of Mexico that has the richest veins of uranium in the entire country, and other natural resources. So, could there be a connection? We know that there's been many UFO cases that have there's been a connection to UFO to the presence of uranium and other minerals. So that could be a possibility as well.
How do people get a hold of your website?
Yes, we'd like to hear from folks. We've made a lot of contacts from former residents of Coyame and from other folks familiar with the story. Our website is roswellbooks.com, roswellbooks.com. We'd especially like to hear from the caller that we were just speaking to. We'd like to make contact if he would visit our website and drop us a line. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, he's been anonymous the last couple times he's called.
Yeah. We will keep him that way.
Okay.
If he's willing to give us a little more information.
Well, good luck, and thank you for the research, by the way, both of you.
Hey, thank you, George, and I'm looking forward to seeing you and Tom coming to the Bay Area UFO Expo in a couple of weeks.
Okay, yeah, I look forward to that, too. We haven't posted that yet, but we will. My travel schedule on coasttocoastam.com. I'll be back in a moment. Our UFO extravaganza continues with Phil Imbrogno, Coast to Coast AM.